This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Equity Minds.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. I'm excited for this episode. We've seen so many new ETFs come to market, but not a lot of crypto ones. There's been a whole bunch of reasons for that, which we're going to unpack. But we've got a guest here who is right on the forefront of getting crypto ETFs onto traditional stock exchanges.
That's it. It is our pleasure to welcome to the Equity Mates studio, Dan Annan. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, gents, for having me.
It's not often that we have someone with such extensive experience in ETFs join us in the studio. Just to give you a bit of a sense, so Dan is the CEO of Cosmos Asset Management, a relatively new Australian asset manager looking to list crypto-focused ETFs on the Australian Stock Exchange, as Ren said. But Dan, you have a lot of experience in local and global funds management industry. You headed up BetaShares institutional ETF business for 3 years. Prior to that, you held various roles within iShares ETF business for BlackRock, both in US and Australia, and focused on capital markets as well as incorporating equity and fixed incomes ETFs into their business model. So a lot of experience in ETFs, and we're going to unpack it all today as you push for crypto-focused ETFs here in Australia.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I mean, look, one of the really fun part about this whole journey for me is the early years of just trying to, you know, hone my skills and learn as much as I can. And when the idea came about and how do we actually get a crypto ETF out the door, it was a challenge that I was ready for. So super stoked to talk more about it.
Nice.
Well, Dan, before we speak about the world of crypto ETFs, we love to, I guess, unpack your journey a little bit, and we'd love to start with your very first investment. Can you take us back? Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, absolutely. My very first investment was actually in university. As part of our economics class, we had this project where we had to build a portfolio, and I ended up picking a mining stock, and I couldn't tell you what that stock was. But in the first 2 days of the stock, I was up like 5,000%.
No way.
You know, only you know, I mean, it was just incredible. And I remember my professor just going, "You're like, you know, you're lucky, you know." Bum or whatever, what have you not. There was a proper word that he'd use, which I wouldn't use on here. But, you know, that sort of, it piqued my interest. You know, it was sort of like, wow, like, you know, how could you run, you know, 5,000% in 2 days in a mining stock, you know? And, you know, that experience, you know, just really kind of taught me to just really have a think about the fundamentals of investing. You know, because I mean, I ended up spending quite a bit of time just really, in the beginning, it was just a joke, just basically dots on the wall, pick five stocks. And I ended up, you know, 5,000% up in the portfolio. So, you know, what that did was basically open my eyes to, you know, really thinking about the fundamentals of companies when it comes to investing, thinking about diversification along the way. Mm. Too bad I didn't actually have my cash in it.
I know, I was going to ask.
Now, Dan, you've had a pretty interesting story from Ghana through to the US and then also from professional football into funds management.
Yeah.
So before we jump into the meat of the interview, perhaps can you take us through some of the key moments of your journey over the last sort of few years or so?
When it comes to sport, I mean, if you grow up in, you know, most third world countries, Africa, you know, football or soccer is sort of like the sport that, you know, most of these emerging economies play. And, you know, I grew up playing it, you know, I had family that played professionally, so that just sort of like naturally gravitated towards just like trying to play. I don't think growing up I had this idea that I was going to play professional soccer, like that wasn't sort of the goal, right? But I moved to the US at the age of around 12, and just, you know, walking by a park, some kids were playing, and you know, I just like jumped on just as if I would if I was playing, and you know, playing, walking across a park in Ghana. And I just jumped on and I started playing, and the coaches got all excited and then signed me up. And that's where I would say, like, I actually started playing my organized football ever. You know, it was just so funny. I was just like walking by and like, anyway, so for me, one of the things that really helped me with balance was that my dad was always around like education first, sports second, right? So I enjoyed playing soccer. So for me to actually be able to do that, I had to make sure that, like, my schooling was right. You know, I remember one summer I got benched. When I got benched, my dad kept me home from going to play because, you know, my grades weren't as good as he wanted to. And so basically just, you know, basically house chores. And so that was a summer I wouldn't forget, you know, which kept me in line. So because of, I guess, my athleticism, I was able to sort of succeed. And I got lucky to go play professional afterwards.
Mm. Mm. And from there, you jumped into the world of finance and then into the world of ETFs at iShares, which is now owned by BlackRock, at BetaShares, which when you joined them was a bit of a startup, I guess, in the ETF space in Australia, taking it to some of the multi-trillion dollar incumbents. I guess, why ETFs and what have you learned in that journey?
Yeah, look, my journey into ETFs actually was around 2002, and it was just when I had just transitioned out of, you know, playing sport. You know, at the time I was with AllianceBernstein, which is, you know, a fund manager out of New York, and one of my early jobs there as an associate was, you know, just basically managing mandates for clients. So we won an emerging markets equities mandate from an institutional client. And at the time, you know, we needed to gain exposure when we were funding that mandate to China. In certain markets, in emerging markets, they're called ID markets. You need a license to trade in those markets or a tax ID to trade in those markets when you're opening up accounts. And so it could take 8 months to a year to actually be able to do that. And so historically, what most fund managers will do is use derivatives or futures to gain exposure to that asset class. In that process, we came across FXI, which was an iShares ETF that gave exposure to China, right? And so really, that was my first experience to ETFs. You know, I mean, I didn't go looking for it. You know, I think the portfolio manager found it, did this comparison. It was just like, you know, let the client know this is what we're going to use for that exposure. And that's where I cut my teeth, right? You know, so right away, like I just gained that interest. It's like, wow, okay, well, I couldn't trade futures to gain access to China, but with FXI, I could go trade China and get exposure to China.
Mm.
So it opened my eyes to the tool the ETF brought to investors, not just to institutional clients, but to retail investors, right? And that's really the key of ETFs. The whole goal when it was started was to, I mean, initially start as an institutional product out of Canada, but the iShares business was to really bring the institutional access that they've, you know, institutional investors have had for ages with indexing to the retail client. And that was sort of, that piqued my interest. It was a growing asset class. You know, we're going to be competing with traditional funds like mutual funds in the US. So to me, that was just like, okay, this is it's new. I've seen it. It was pretty cool for that experience. Why not go give it a go?
Mm-hmm.
So I joined iShares 2005, 2006, you know. I think we were just, you know, not even into the trillion in assets when I joined. And just, you know, took the opportunity to learn every single facet of the business, you know, throughout.
And ETFs have exploded since. I think we came across a couple of the other day single stock ETFs. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what's going on there?
Yeah, whatever it takes, you know? I'm not so sure about it if a single stock ETF makes sense. Unless, well, I mean, why would that make sense?
I think it was leveraged.
There was triple leverage, and okay. Then there was also inverse.
Okay, yeah. Fair yeah, enough. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. But like, is there such? Will there ever be too many ETFs?
Well, look, so long as you're trying to solve a problem for investors, right? That makes sense. Because what's an ETF? ETF is an access tool. You know, if you have an access tool that gives specific investors a single stock leveraged exposure, so be it, right? And that's all it is. I mean, it's been designed to give both professionals and retail investors a way to gain access to, you know, whichever asset class you're looking for. So equities, you know, plain and simple, you know, like, you know, again, I wouldn't touch a single stock, you know, ETF, but I definitely, you know, like exposures like ID markets, China, et cetera, for the professionals. If you're an Australian investor and if you wanted to own the Australian market, you know, ASX 200, that's an easy play. Commodities, you know, silver, gold, you know, oil, all these exposures that are really hard to gain access to, you know, the ETF gives you access, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of, you know, dovetails into, you know, the crypto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's turn to that. And I think a lot of people who are trying to solve this crypto access problem are, you know, crypto believers. They've come from a crypto background, but you've come from an ETF background, and I guess that might be a little bit different. So let's start with your first introduction to crypto. When did you come across it?
The first time I actually just paid attention to it was in 2009. And it was at a town hall at BlackRock, and the asset class was sort of just rocketing and everyone's sort of talking about it, which tends to happen.
Yeah.
And the question came up, you know, would BlackRock ever launch a Bitcoin ETF?
In 2009.
Yeah. The flat out response, I think the question was basically, it was a town hall, the question came up, and then the question was thrown back at the audience or whoever asked that question, and it was more like, is this a regulated asset class or is this a regulated asset? And the response was no. And he goes, well, you have your answer. Right. So it was more around like, okay, well, if it's not a regulated asset, then we can't list it as an ETF. Fast forward, you know, back in Australia, I mean, I'm living in Australia now, and, you know, I had some friends that were closely looking at this space, you know, and just, you know, picking my brain as an ETF expert, right? So again, you know, how do we think about pricing? How do we think about calculation? How do we think about custody? Just trying to solve all these, you know, nitty-gritties to actually deliver what you would call an unregulated platform, which had seen mass adoption, into a regulated platform, which is what the ETF gives you. So just in our discussions, I just thought, it's like, wow, okay, well, like, there's a lot of cool things going on here that we can easily solve. It will take some convincing with the regulators, right, to get us there. And right away, that curiosity just piqued my interest. You know, just like, well, there's a problem. I think we can solve it. Let's get together. Let's figure out how to do it.
So Cosmos, well, for those that haven't come across it before, we said at the top, it's a relatively new Australian asset manager, crypto-focused ETFs. Tell us a bit about it. Where is it up to? Mm-hmm. So that if those are sitting at home and are interested, what might be available for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, you know, the business was founded, Cosmos Asset Management was founded, you know, back in 2020, Feb 2020, with a sole focus of looking at the crypto asset class and delivering it into an ETF.
Can we just pause on the timing? Yeah. Feb 2020, great time to start a business, I imagine.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You know, I was not involved at the time, but like, again, I was definitely, you know, the discussion to the lunch table like we're having now, and my brain's being picked about it. In 2021, because again, like, the curiosity just really, really piqued my interest. And I was like, okay, well, we were having discussions around it, and the guys were like, look, why don't you come run it? Like, you know, you sort of helped us out in this discussion along the journey. Like, we're at a place at the time, the, you know, one of the founding partners is focused on listing their Bitcoin mining business in the US. So they were so focused and didn't have the attention to the Cosmos business. It's like, I'm just, you know, come do it. And I was like, well, sure, you know, yeah, it's a horse, a horse. But the key for us was, you know, just trying to identify where were the roadblocks. There was a lot of roadblocks, right? From exchanges and your ruling, from ASIC and the definition of what this asset class should or should not be. There was some involvement from Treasury and some politicians around like their views on the asset class. You know, luckily we had a team, you know, that had a, I would say, connectivity into all those pockets, right? So my role in the beginning was just really to figure out like the product structure, you know, and then let the other players just figure out the politics of, you know, the education to get us through the door.
Today, Cosmos has three ETFs, I believe, a spot Bitcoin, a spot Ethereum, and then the Bitcoin miners ETF. Is that why the spot Bitcoin and the spot Ethereum ETFs hold the Canadian ETF? Is that to get around rules?
Yes and no.
Okay.
When we first designed our Bitcoin ETF, we had a cold storage wallet locally to gain access to it. Now, in coming up and listing the product at the final hour, we learned about some margin requirements that were put in place for the asset class. And so, and I totally understood why. So in the case of crypto, if you don't have the infrastructure in place, you can't go and buy the underlying coin.
So Dan, just like a single stock ETF might sound a bit silly, what's the argument or what's the need for a spot ETF for Bitcoin or Ethereum when you can just go and buy the underlying asset itself?
Yeah, look, I mean, one of the key reasons is security, right? I mean, I'm sure you guys have all heard it, right? Like the stories around someone forgetting their password or losing your token or getting hacked, you know, all of the above, right? And you know, I haven't made a mind that it's, you know, it's, this is all joking. It's sort of a bit of a sad story, but, you know, the parents, you know, were doing really well last year, had about, I think, 3 million or so in crypto. Started to renovate their house, you know, thinking that, you know, this asset, you know, they've got this cash there, and they got a, you know, one of those online, I guess, USB tokens or offline tokens, cold storage, plugged it in, gone.
No way.
And that's just like one, right? And so like that's one instance, and I'm sure that there's countless stories out there, right? You're going to, unfortunately, in this environment, you're going to find some bad apples out there trying to basically take advantage of such an example. You know, the ETF was designed for two reasons, and this is what piqued my interest to actually come and do this. Is one, it gave access to professionals that had clients that were managing money for clients. There were clients were asking them for it, but they couldn't actually give them access to it. So they had to basically turn them away. That's one. Two, in the context of asset allocation and portfolio management, you want to be able to see all your portfolios in one place where you can actually assess what risk you're taking in any given day. This is an extremely volatile asset class, right? So you want to be able to actually assess that. And so what the ETF does is it brings all the bells and whistles in trading in trading shares, in managing risk systems in a portfolio, and then plug in, you know, sort of the underlying asset to that familiar ground, right? So the key benefit really of having an ETF in this asset class is risk management, right? Because what you do is you basically minimize the chance of some of these things happening.
Yeah. If you want to never have to understand what cold storage is or anything like that, you can't. You can just get access to the asset.
Yeah.
So I think most people at this point in, you know, 2022, they understand what Bitcoin and Ethereum are. The digital miners access ETF for me is the one that's probably the most interesting of the three, because it's not something I've really come across before. And, you know, over and over again in industry that we hear about on this podcast, picks and shovels, find a way to invest in the picks and shovels of the industry, whatever it is. And digital miners are really the picks and shovels of the digital asset industry. So tell us a little bit about the ETF. And I guess for people who aren't super familiar with the role miners play, help us situate them in the crypto ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So look, the key role that the miners play is securing a network. And by doing so, they get rewarded either Bitcoin, now Bitcoin only. I mean, it was Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies. But that's really their key role, right? So if you think about how are transactions verified and secured in a network, that is the key role of the cryptocurrency miners. Right? They provide what I would say the security and verification of transactions, and by doing that, they actually get rewarded for it. If we put it in sort of, you know, in comparison, like think of it this way: how does gold come to market? You have, you know, gold miners that go out and they basically dig and they find gold and they bring it to market. So what the Bitcoin or Ethereum or cryptocurrency miners do is how coins or tokens that come to market is by verification, they are rewarded a token, and that's how new coins are basically provided to the market. All right. So again, if you're new to the space and you're thinking, all right, this is an asset class that seems interesting. I don't really understand, you know, the tokens themselves and how they work or what have you not. But I do understand. I understand equities. So the question then becomes, how do I value a Bitcoin miner? How do they make money? And for some context out there, I think the stat from last year, miners generated, you know, Bitcoin miners generated about $20 billion in revenue last year.
Oh, wow.
So, and then what is the model? So it's if you're sort of to cut how they make money, it's energy, their cost of energy, resources, and the price of Bitcoin, right? So, you know, if, let's say if I'm spending $5,000 to win a token, right? At the peak in October, you know, my net was 61K, right? Today, obviously that's come in quite a bit, right? So like if I'm still spending $5,000, then my net is now like 15K approximately. Just, and the data is available to anyone that wanted to see this, you know, like, you know, you can just Google, like, you know, what are the miners' revenue? So, and these are listed companies that are out there basically for the next generation of our digital economy. So think of it this way. If you had an opportunity to invest in sort of cloud businesses back in the early 2000s, what the mining companies are today, from a reference perspective, are the cloud businesses back in the 2000s. And it's early stages, right? Like, you're going to have some businesses that are going to make it. You're going to have some businesses that won't make it just based on the business model and volatility. So the best way to actually gain exposure is a basket of companies that are in play.
The two challenges to that idea of, you know, the future of miners is, in the short term, energy costs. Like, the biggest cost input is energy, we all know what's happening with energy at the moment. Longer term, it's this conversation around proof of work v. proof of stake. And you mentioned that there's no longer the need for Ethereum miners, and that's because Ethereum merged and now they're a proof of stake network rather than a proof of work network that requires crypto miners. Has that affected the ETF, interest in the ETF, any of the companies in the ETF? How have you in the crypto space gone through this?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously within the basket, there will be some companies that were, you know, Ethereum miners. So let's take a step back and have a think about, you know, if I'm a miner, Ethereum miner, what were my options for the merge, which is what we're talking about, right? So if I was mining Bitcoin to win token in the proof of work platform, now I've got to think about proof of stake and how do I still continue? So if you think about it, most of the Ethereum miners will probably have custody or holdings of ETH. Right. So what do? I just shift to staking to continue to win my rewards. So that's one. So it's how, you know, as far as what,
so
that
you save on the energy cost as well then.
Bang. So you're up, right? Depending on what your inventory is. But what one of the interesting things that we saw at the merge is that you saw a lot of the miners basically move to Ethereum Classic mining. So we saw the hash rate jump about 280% instantly. So, you know, again, it's too early to tell the impact of revenue generated by the miners with the merge. But the key thing is that, you know, these guys, you would assume, you know, if I was running it, you would assume that I would think about all the possibilities and opportunities within the digital economy, and to ensure that I'm basically, you know, have processes in place to pivot and make sure that I don't basically bleed dry on my business model.
So we cover a lot of what happens in equity markets on the show, but not as closely as we don't follow the crypto market as closely. So how would you kind of sum up what's going on at the at the moment? It feels like we're definitely in a bear market, crypto winter. How would you sort of sum it up?
Look, I mean, I think I think we started to talk about this when I first walked in the door, right? Generally speaking, you know, risk assets across the board, and when I say risk asset, I'm including equity, risk asset, tech assets, are all being squeezed,
yeah.
Right? Because if you have to think about the risk of capital and how investors basically allocate. Now, one of the interesting thing about crypto in this current environment is that for the first time, we're sort of entering into an environment where you had more institutional investors participating than in previous past, right? So for me, two things sort of rings a bell there. Like for me, it tells me that, you know, you've got an institutional mindset or acceptance of the asset class. So that's a positive. And with that, that's going to push for regulation to support the asset class going forward. But if you have a look at, and again, like I guess in the simplest term, like what crypto is going through now is what the tech sector went through in 2000. With the exception of now, you have more institutions in play, you have more regulators looking at it to ensure that, again, individual investors are protected. And so that's the positive for me. Mm. But across the board, you know, if you talk to any equity manager or if you talk to any, you know, hedge fund, risk-free capital is scarce, meaning like most people that, you know, that are holding cash are going, okay, well, how do I allocate that cash based on what central banks are doing? Mm. If I look at the crypto asset class specifically, you know, if you look at it as far as from a price perspective, we've been pretty stable, you know, with Bitcoin sitting at around like 20K. Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how it's sat there for so long.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've been watching is Fed interest rate movements, or just central bank interest rate movement and impact. So when the Fed started to move, we saw sort of, you know, we saw it. Like, yeah. You know, like, again, leveraged businesses got crunched and just got smashed. And then we went from, you know, I think it was 60 and started in October, like, you know, 60, then 45, then 35, and then 20. Mm-hmm. And we've been sitting here and we've seen consistent movement from central banks raising rates, but we've seen the stability of price. Mm-hmm. My view, and I think, you know, most would agree, is that from the crypto asset class perspective, this potential, you know, you have to have a view, this potential that it's been washed out, this potential that we are, you know, at a ground floor from a price perspective. But the mentality, you just think about like the investors that got burnt, you know, like this is where, you know, you had a lot of, and it doesn't help when the media also, and no point in you guys, when you have an asset class, you know, basically delivering such performance that everyone basically turns to it, and you see heightened information and you get, you know, locker room talks and everyone is jumping into it and buying high and getting smashed. And then when they get to the ground floor, when they shall be actually allocating capital, yeah, Everyone's scared and confused. I think this is a good ground floor for investors just thinking about the asset class. I mean, could it move down, you know, another 5K or so? Can Bitcoin go down to 15 or maybe even 14? Possibly. But look, just, you know, if you dial a course, if you have to have a long-term view for this asset class, again, like the tech in 2000, you know, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket when you get in here. Like, it's a dip and dollar cost averaging, and you have to have a view of a long call option for the asset class, right?
The thing that I struggle to remind myself, but I do try and remind myself, is I try and think back to like 2017, 2018, and like how much mania there was in that peak then. It peaked at like 19,000. It peaked at what Bitcoin is today. And obviously then it went down and we had a crypto winter, and then it just went crazy in like 2020, 2021. But where we are now, which we're saying is a crypto winter, was the peak of the mania just, what, 4 years ago. It's pretty crazy when you put it all in context like that.
Mm. Yeah. And look, and I think what we've seen with, you know, in particular with Bitcoin, every 4 years, you know, we see sort of this new heights, right? Because of the halving and difficulty of mining. So I'm not here to say, you know, like, you know, go rushing in, but certainly do your homework. If you look at the fundamentals of what's happening behind the scenes with the, with, you know, whether with the companies or with the coins, you know, you continue to see increase, you know, individual adoption. You see, you know, merchants entering the space, accepting payments for Bitcoin. You know, it's funny, I just sent a text, to my brother-in-law and my father-in-law just this morning. I just saw today that Colorado today is accepting, you know, Bitcoin payments and taxes.
No way.
You know, we're slowly seeing the asset get incorporated into our daily lives. And we're seeing, you know, states accept them as payments for taxes. We're seeing merchants enter it, accept them for payments as, you know, for goods and services. And then you have a general investor base that basically holds it for the long-term view. I see a future, you know, where Bitcoin is basically being held across emerging economies. And you see the G7 countries creating their own digital currencies. And we've already seen sort of that test cases sort of happening, even including here in Australia. So this asset class is here to stay, and it will be embedded in our capital markets in some shape or form. Mm. No one knows what that's going to look like in the future, right? But I think, you know, if you're a curious investor, do your homework and then think about tools that allows you to basically gain exposure without taking too much risk, which is why the ETF tool basically is got me excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. The emerging market point is a really interesting one because, you know, we obviously sit here in Australia and we think about Bitcoin in a certain type of way as like an investment asset. But I remember, you know, when Venezuela was really collapsing. Well, I mean, it's still not great, but like that, they were talking about like rates of Bitcoin adoption there, and like the conversation you have about crypto there is very different to the conversation we have about crypto here. And it's hard for us to sort of put ourselves in that context, but I feel like that's a really interesting conversation that probably is one that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, look, I mean, so just a little bit on that. You know, if you think about fixed income and how most of these emerging economies raise capital when it comes to debt, right? So for global acceptance and for global issuance, because of the volatility of these, you know, like these countries, most of them will issue debt in U.S. dollars. And at the same token, if you think about the inflation environment of the U.S. dollar and the impact on these economies, it's been extremely punitive. So, and when I talk about capital markets, I see a future where, and it's already starting to happen. Like I think maybe 4 or 5 months ago, you had, I think it might have been Venezuela or somewhere in South America, invited 40 emerging economies to come together and really think about, you know, Bitcoin as part of their treasury balance sheet and how they gravitate towards, you know, issuing debt under this digital token. Mm. What that will do is, again, once it gains global acceptance and you see more of a, you know, global mass adoption of the token, you see some stability. And guess what? The blockchain technology would actually improve fixed interest and transfer of capital and transfer of trading, et cetera, across globes. So I see an economy where, like, again, emerging economies coming together under one token, Bitcoin, issuing debt because it will be well accepted across the globe, and then interchangeably being able to trade that asset. Right? It's not gonna happen overnight, right? But again, that's sort of, I think that's my view. You know, when you have such an interest in technology that's being built, you know, look at all the different possibilities that, you know, and the outcome of what the future holds.
Mm. Well, there's plenty happening and coming down down the pipeline of future technologies in the world of crypto. Web3, NFTs were a thing. I don't know if they're still a thing. DeFi, you name it. There's plenty happening. So what sort of technology is really exciting you the most in the ecosystem of crypto at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think Web3 is super exciting, right? You know, if, you know, for those that, you know, I had to go sort of refresh, what's Web1, what's Web2, what's Web3? But like Web1, as we all know, is just basically like, that's where we just got information. That's it, you know, like, you know, Book. Exactly, yeah, right? Yeah. And then Web 2 basically gave us the opportunity, which is what we are in now, where we can contribute to that information. What's happened with Web 2 is that it's still centralized and it's controlled by a few, that information. And so what Web 3 will do is basically trying to break that up and give more control, decentralize the internet for everyone. You know, and if I think about the tokens today and how they basically play onto that Web3 blockchain or the Web3 technology, I think Ethereum is super exciting for the Web3 technology because of the smart contract nature of it. NFTs, look, I'm still trying to get smart around it. I know everything about it. I'm still trying to get smarter around it. The best thing that's been explained to me about NFTs is that if you can think about like the golf club or the country club, you know, so think of NFTs as the crypto country club.
Okay.
You know, some of those, you know, some of the smart minds in the space basically forming this club and basically trying to sort of generate attention to that asset class. I'm still trying to learn about it. I can tell you that I'm not invested in it personally just because I just don't understand it. Mm-hmm. But what really excites me is the Web3 technology whereby, you know, just think, here's an example. If you, we all listen to, we all use Apple Music, right?
I don't use Apple Music. I'm a Spotify guy. What?
I don't use Spotify
or
Apple.
You're a YouTube music guy.
I'm a YouTube guy.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Damn, well, we're going to have to come up with another analogy. There you
go. Well, let's just stick with Apple Music. That's what I have. But I'm sure Spotify is probably the same. But just think about the platform and payments of those that are involved, right? So you have a record label. You have the Apple platform, and then you have the creator, the artist. Now, at the moment, you know, the artist basically contracts with the record label, and the record label contracts with Apple. Think about the payment system. You know, like, I don't know when they actually get paid or anything like that, but it's broken. It's broken down in three pieces. There's a future whereby, and I think this is where Ethereum becomes really, really interesting, whereby if I go and buy my music on Apple, instantaneously, you know, I get paid. The record label gets paid and Apple gets paid. So the artist basically gets paid right away through the Ethereum blockchain technology because of the smart contract nature. That same technology could apply for insurance companies and how they manage premiums across their businesses. And any other business across the globe that has logistical players in there for payments. That is the world, I think, of Web3, where we all sort of have access and contribute and own our data.
It is a fascinating world, one that I've certainly not got my head around, but I feel pretty lucky that we get to sit here and have conversations and try and get our heads around it. But Dan, we have run out of time, so we always like to finish with the same final three questions, so we'll jump to those. And the first one is, do you have any books that you consider must read?
Yeah. One book that I read, I think, probably in my early years was Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Okay. What that book taught me was, I mean, I'm a shitty golfer, right?
Everyone is.
But I go out there and try and play every day. Actually, there's a
every day.
Not every day. I mean,
yeah. I wish. Jeez, that's price is dry.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, yeah. There's a definitely not every day. Otherwise, that would be a problem. if I'm playing every day and I'm still that bad, that's a problem. But what was I saying? Oh yeah, there's a group of guys that you go out on a golf trip every day, and these guys are, you know, they've been friends forever, and I just jumped in like as a dad, you know, club and go out with them. And let's just say that I come out with a pink shirt every single day or every single trip because, you know, I'm that bad. But what golf is not a game of perfect taught me is just like, you've got to think about persistence. Mike Tyson says this, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. And certainly like with this environment, obviously, as you can imagine, we've been punched in the face, right? And so you've got to think, you know, be ready to think on your feet and pivot. And most importantly, stay calm. And that's what, you know, that's what that book basically, you know, that's what it's trying to get out of. It's like, you know, persistence, don't get into your head and just be quick on your feet and stay calm.
Yeah, nice.
Nice. Well, I haven't heard of that one, so I'll add it to the reading list.
There you go.
The second question, we love to draw out the, you know, what the hallmarks of really great companies. So forget the investment case today, forget what it's trading at, valuation, anything mm-hmm. like that. Just purely on what the company is, what it does, and who it's run by. What's the best company you've ever come across?
I can't use any of the companies that I worked for, even though they're all like, you know. Even though they're all stellar, obviously, you know. So I've got to sort of think outside here. I read Michael Dell's book, just learning about how he built chips. And I think if you think about the history of that company and how they've pivoted and managed through all the turbulence and how they still are sort of, you know, surviving today. And then they're even getting into the world of this asset class, right? Like they're already sort of putting plans in place to get into this asset class. I think, you know, that model to me is a good model for a business. And what I mean by that is just keeping an eye on what the future holds, making sure that you make the right pivots, you know, placing the right bets, and ensuring that you stay ahead of your competition and making sure you're delivering market needs. I think that's, you know, I would say that's that.
Dell is also a fascinating case of, I guess, financial engineering, you'd call it, like the way that they've structured and restructured that business over time. They this year they spun off VMware, and yeah, it's a fascinating case study for people who are interested in like the mechanics of finance as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final question, Dan, and we want to say thank you for joining us today. And if people want to find out more about Cosmos, they can go to the website cosmosam.com.au. They can read about the ETFs there. But Dan, final question, if you think back to your younger self, you know, at uni, somehow finding a 5,000% company in a couple of days, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, this is I just recently received one from my mom, and, you know, like, you know, I have to sort of use that one. And it's like, life is a lesson, and the trick is find out what it's trying to teach you.
Nice.
Love it. Great way to end. Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We do really appreciate it. Plenty of interesting sort of, I guess, topics and points to dwell on, given where we're at in the cycle and everything that's going on in the ecosystem of cryptocurrency. So good luck with Cosmos. We'll certainly be watching. And if any of the Equity Mates community are interested, as Alex said, cosmosam.com.au. But Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you, gents, for having me, and looking forward to our future conversations.
Thanks, Dan.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian Financial Services License and relies on the exemption available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast or video. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.